the fake trailers. Still waiting, folks. But anyway, the one fake trailer that Rodriguez did, Machete, with Danny Trejo, went over so well that, yeah, of course, Rodriguez had to make it. And this time it's with 20th Century Fox, which I didn't know until I was watching it. I thought this would be, well, the other place, the other studio that Rodriguez works at quite often. But it's got a cast that's, that evened out WTF's The Expendables as far as really... Wow. So, for your listening pleasure, an edited version of the original fake trailer from Grindhouse of Robert Rodriguez's Machete.
They called him Machete.
$70 a day for yard work. $100 for roofing.
Get in.
$125 for septic. Sewage.
Have you ever killed anyone before?
As you may know, illegal aliens such as yourself are being forced out of our country at an alarming rate for the good of both our people. Our new senator must die. And for that, I will pay you $150,000. Cash.
He was given an offer he couldn't refuse.
I'd cost the most. Because I'm the best there is.
Set up, double-crossed, and left for dead.
I took a vow of peace. And now you want me to help you kill all these men?
Yes, bro. I mean, Padre.
See what I can do.
He knows the score.
Where are my wife and daughter?
He gets the women. And he kills the bad guys.
Oh, you knew that a Mexican day laborer is a damn federal!
But they soon realize...
He's coming after us.
They just with the wrong Mexican. Action. Suspense.
Please, Father, have mercy.
God has mercy. I don't.
If you're gonna hire Machete to kill the bad guy, you better make damn sure the bad guy isn't you. Machete. Rated X.
Interesting enough, I was watching an old Fred Williamson DVD, and the same trailer voice guy did that one, too. Go figure. I guess he's not doing too many of the Bergman-Fellini films back in the day. So some of the people that are in this cast, and one of the things that I noticed watching the fake trailer was I think Rodriguez recycled footage and put it into... the final product itself.
Yeah, I think you may be right.
Most of it, I'd say.
They distressed it intentionally for the trailer, and I think they unstressed it for the movie.
Because, and I've already seen postings of people, well, some people shouting with glee that Lindsay Lohan is nude, and I hate to bring this up, guys, but, you know, you never, the hair covers her face, so it could be a double for all we know. Not since Up in the Air has there been... Well, okay, it wasn't as big as a letdown as Up in the Air, but
yeah,
there's a shot.
I think it's a body double.
Probably. So, but yeah, you have Steven Seagal. That's why he wasn't in The Expendables. Or Don Johnson, for that matter.
Yep. By the way, my favorite thing about this movie, and there were not many things that I favored about this movie, was the opening credit where they said, and introducing Don Johnson.
Yes, exactly. The weird special guest star credit that people get from time to time, like Eli Wallach gets in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly,
oh, yeah.
Mr. Slagle. So, yeah, Lindsay Lohan's in this. Jeff Fahey, who was in the original trailer, is in this film again. Of course, Cheech Marin, everybody's favorite shotgun-wielding priest. Robert De Niro shows up as a senator who may or may not be for or against illegal immigration. Yeah. So, but you thought that the fake trailer itself was better than the actual film.
Yeah, which is, unfortunately, I also disagree with you about Grindhouse, in that people watch those fake trailers and realize that they were much more entertaining than the movie they were watching. And now, yeah, I realize that the fake trailer for the is much more entertaining than the movie they made out of it. I mean, I was amazed because I admit I'd mostly forgotten the fake trailer. How closely the actual movie sticks to it.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, everything that's like an actual aha moment in the movie where you might actually laugh and sort of get off on the whole, the wonderful schlocky feel of it, you just heard.
Oh, I can't disagree. There's a lady with a cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
And there's the best use of a man's intestines.
Okay, I'll give you that one. I did mention that one.
And Don Johnson's sideburns. I think what he wanted to do, obviously, with Grindhouse and some of the other pictures, and I guess I'm already comparing it to The Expendables, and yeah, I jumped on The Expendables bandwagon. No, I didn't. I liked it when I first saw it. But it knows it's being this ridiculous, and I enjoyed how ridiculous it got. Especially avenging nun Lindsay Lohan near the end of the film, where there's 9 characters all wielding pistols and machetes, and you know everybody gets their final moment near the end of the picture. And I just thought it was a good silly time.
Yeah, I didn't. And as for the Lindsay Lohan moment, where she comes out in a nun's habit. With a machine gun and starts blowing things away. I actually said to myself, Lindsay Lohan's career has arrived exactly where it was supposed to.
Yeah, well, at least she's not remembered for Chapter 27, the really god-awful I Shot John Lennon movie. It was bad. Tom Savini's in this as well as the hitman, who, you know, no subtle punches, especially, we don't want to say what happens to the Cheech Marin character, but it's something of an exploitive nature, because they made an exploitation film, or mexploitation film, as some people are calling it, not I.
Yeah, yeah. The stuff that they did add to the movie, I really didn't like the whole revenge story that Machete, instead of being just, you know, a kick butt, you know, badass killer guy, now he's, you know, an ex-cop who was done wrong. And
right,
because
Seagal agreed to be in the picture.
I don't want to see. Machete should just be Machete, an unrepentant bad guy.
All right, so I'll ask, should this film have maybe been a Grindhouse length? Should it have been 70 minutes as opposed to 100?
Yeah, it was 105 minutes, and seriously, you know, this is the sort of movie that's supposed to be 77 minutes long.
For some reason, though, I still think the pacing is still, I don't think it lags a whole heck of a lot.
Oh, I do.
You do?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, it does have those few moments, the ridiculous moments, but unfortunately, like I said, you know, I saw them all already in the fake preview. Other than the intestine one, which I won't tell you there's something having to do with intestines.
And we have mixed company. When we want to talk about the cell phone moment, it's just bad.
Okay, yeah. That's
silly bad.
That's pretty awful. Or how about the fact that Lindsay Lohan gets it on with the Machete character with her mom?
Well, that's in the original trailer to begin with.
We didn't know it was her mom, though, was it?
Yes.
It was supposed to be her mom?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
You can pick that up from the trailer?
Yes, because the Jeff Fahey character says, "What have you done with my wife and my daughter?" And then it cuts to, wow, moment.
Okay.
See how much I've watched Grindhouse?
Oh, boy. I have to say, I did not think much of Danny Trejo in this. I think they could have done a lot more with his persona.
Would you rather he had more dialogue to try?
Yeah, I actually would have.
Really?
Because, you know, you had the whole man with no name thing, which, you know, countless actors have done. And a lot of times, you know, it was people like Charles Bronson who legitimately could not act. And I think somebody like Danny Trejo, I would really like to see what he could do something with actual lines and, you know, I mean, he has 2 emotions in this movie, you know.
Which are?
His face contorted in rage and preparing to contort into rage. But by the way, did you ever notice that he's really bad, that they really shoot around him in the action scenes? You know, it's like, you remember how in the first Bourne movie with Jason Bourne, you saw Matt Damon doing all the action, and then the last 2, it just became all these, you know, separated cuts of hand, foot, and you couldn't really...
Yeah, that stuff kind of bugged me. I'm sure, I mean...
Do you know why they did it, I think, with this?
Why did they do this?
Because Danny Trejo is 66 years old. Did you realize that?
No, I did not.
I did not realize that either.
Because I remember, well, you know what, it's funny you mentioned that, because The first thing I know he got in, one of the first things, if not the first thing he got involved in, he was a trainer for Eric Roberts in Runaway Train way back in 1985.
Yeah.
And he's 66, really?
He's 66. And if you
he
watch...
He better than me.
He's the same age as Robert De Niro, who's obviously also in the movie.
But you know what? Trejo didn't have to do Little Fockers, so
yeah.
So you got to cut him some slack on that part.
Yeah.
You know, Trejo's not trying to finance the Tribeca Film Festival by doing junk for the last 10 years. There is that feeling. And by the way, I want to plug the film on the Filmy App website when you did the That Guy, That Gal piece. Great, wonderful piece about character actors that finally get to do. And I'm going to throw in my two cents a little later on. So okay. On DVD and Blu-ray, if there is a Grindhouse cut, would you watch that and can reconsider?
I would.
Okay. So we just got to talk to Robert Rodriguez. How you doing, Lisa?
You doing all right? Oh, you know he's already committed to making two sequels.
Well, because they say it because the trailer guy at the end says coming soon, Machete Kills. And Machete Kills Again.
Hollywood Reporter has an article up today. That's legit. They're already planning two sequels.
Maybe those will be 77 minutes.
Maybe, but...
Combined.
We can only hope.
I have said before, and I'll say again, until I see a poster or a trailer, I'll just wait. So this is my response.
Yes!
And Chris is not. It's the opposite.
No.
It's that one. Do we have that? Play. I'll be fair. Why not?
No. It's your show. I'm just the kid.
It wasn't that great.
Yeah, that too. All right. That's okay. Okay. Also opening theater, something that all three of us got to see, right, is the new George Clooney assassin drama, The American, where he plays the title role. And he's in Italy, not too far from his villa, I'm sure, keeping the cost down. And, give this a listen.
It's Jack. I want out.
Consider it your last job.
You don't even have to pull the trigger.
You're an American.
Let's say, a working vacation.
You have the hands of a craftsman. You are good with machines.
I do have a good head.
The Belgians think someone might have put a tail on you.
You've got a long list of enemies, Jack.
I told them no one gets close to you.
They don't.
You're a good man, but you have a secret.
You have done much sinning.
All men are sinners. Everything I've done, I've had good cause to do. I can't stay forever.
Take me with you.
A man can be rich if he has God in his heart.
I don't think God's very interested in me, Papa.
Okay, so here's my question. Who stars in this film in 1971? Alain Delon, Oliver Reed, or I was going to say Charles Bronson, but you slammed him earlier, so I'm not going to bring that up. This is, and I wish I'd come up with this. I'm sure everybody's doing it, but I heard David Edelstein, which you can hear next on Fresh Air. Well, not this review, but he referred to it as a throwback to the old paranoid, brooding assassin films of the late 60s, early 70s, where you have one American actor or English actor, and then you have an international cast surrounding him so it can do well in America as well as in the European market. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I read it. It was phrased that it's called The American, but it's pretty much anything but. I mean, George Clooney is the only thing that is. It's as far as you can get from sort of a blow everything up, high flying, jumping off of moving trains, action thriller, as you can get, while still being this intense, tightly wound, brooding spy chase film. It doesn't need any of that. It's got so much substance. It doesn't need any of that, you know, pyrotechnics.
One thing I will say, and I had to warn some people on this, is It's a slow-paced film.
Right.
Yeah. It is not slow.
Right.
There is a difference between slow and slow-paced. So, yeah, don't expect Salt or a Bourne film.
Exactly.
There's some shots of Clooney making weapons and lots of gorgeous landscape of Italy.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a slow film by any means of the imagination.
Yeah, I heard someone make a comparison that I thought was erroneous. They compared it to the movie Ronin with Robert De Niro from about 12 years ago. And see, I don't think that's...
No.
Because that was a movie also very, you know... in the thriller spy criminal mode, but you know that was a movie that's all about the job. You know, it was a classic heist movie
and the mammoth script and the really cool car chase.
Yeah, and this movie is about an assassin, but it's not a movie about. It's more about the guy and what being an assassin has done to him and has done to his life.
Right, and yes, there is the element of the one last job,
right,
and the assassin wanting to get out, and yes, he's being told not to make friends, even though he does. Especially when it's, I hope I'm saying this, Violante Placido. Oof.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting.
Sorry.
Plays the Clara, the love interest, who's a prostitute that he goes to. And it's interesting how that relationship just sort of sneaks into the movie. It's literally like just a classic throwaway scene of guy goes to see a prostitute, she takes her clothes off, and, you know, everyone's supposed to enjoy the moment, and then it's gone. And he goes back to her again, then he goes back to her again. And it's just like sort of out of left field, this character just sort of waltzes into the story sideways and becomes important.
And as I heard, she's the daughter of the actress who played Apollonia in The Godfather. That played Pacino's wife when he goes to Italy. So there's that.
But I think you're spot on, Chris, about, you know, even her role kind of creeps in. Everything sort of creeps in. There's no need to sort of hit you over the head with, here's the next plot point, here's the next.
No.
You just kind of go along for the ride, and it just sort of reveals itself little by little. And, you know, there's a few tense chase scenes and
what's
going to happen.
That are done really well.
But it never, it delivers so much with so little.
Yeah, definitely not a plot-driven movie.
No, and I think that's gonna irritate some people. Nobody who listens to this show, I hope.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. It's based on the Martin Booth novel, A Very Private Gentleman.
And I know it's an English guy.
It's an English guy. And from my understanding, just looking like up on Wikipedia and stuff, apparently the movie diverges quite a bit from the movie. Like in the book, he's a painter. And he's just hanging out in this town, and sort of people sort of come into, you know, bump up to him and sort of figure out that he has this whole dark past.
Right.
Whereas here, and I don't think he's American.
No. Well, the Englishman, and it's Clooney, it's not going to.
It wouldn't have the
work.
Same punch if it was like Colin Firth or something.
Well, maybe, but, you know, but Clooney's also a producer on this, and he shot it near his house, so.
Yes, exactly. Although, I have to say, I'm really stuck with this whole idea of Charles Bronson in this role now.
Good thing or bad?
I don't know, but you know, like
I grew up watching Bronson films. I cut him a little bit. He's a bad dude, but he also did, you know, the Valachi Papers was pretty good. And he had that one great scene in The Indian Runner.
Yeah.
So it was one of the few films where he doesn't beat anybody up. He's just too busy being Viggo Mortensen's dad.
Yeah. I mean, Mr. Butterfly, what's the joke?
Oh, will you stop? You're a bad person. No, but yeah, it's a. It's interesting to see this for it being called the American. It is a very European film, and if you're into European paced films, and it's not 3 hours, it's not the it's not a Bertolucci picture. They're The Conformist or The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which we'll get to with you, sir, in just a little bit. But really enjoyable. It's kind of a nice cinematic sherbet after all the junk food we had to eat throughout the summer.
If this is how we're ushering in fall movie season, I think we're in good shape.
Yeah.
I think so. We'll see. So this is our thoughts, I think, unanimously on The American.
Yes!
Now, there's a couple other notes. Going on tomorrow at the Earth House Cafe is the documentary Running the Sahara, which Matt Damon, who we brought up earlier, is narrating. And it's three men who... Well, they're going to do the title. They're going to run across the Sahara Desert. Not the Sahara Casino, because that's no more in Las Vegas. And then Going the Distance opened, and you got to see that. And I didn't want to play clips of Justin Long and Drew Barrymore not being a couple or being a couple. How was it for you?
I actually really liked Going the Distance a lot, and I am apparently in the minority because I looked
That's
on
right.
looked on Rotten Tomatoes, where I should mention I am now officially listed as a critic.
Yes, thanks congratulations.
Very much. Only took me 1.5 years of trying to do it, literally.
And you still have all your hair. You didn't rip it out.
But yeah, I think it's sitting about 38% on the tomato meter right now. People are just really ripping it, and I think it's actually a really clever, smart, sweet comedy. It's a one of those raunchy, sweet comedies. There's a lot of raunch.
I've heard people's one of the couple of write-ups I've heard have been that, yeah, the tone switches back and forth, and it kind of bugged people.
Yeah, well, see, I didn't mind the tone. I mean, it was more of a gradual shift. It starts out very raunchy, fun and games, girls and boys, meet cute, all that kind of stuff. And the movie, you know, becomes heftier and you know, sweeter as it goes along. You know, it's a movie that's less about, it's not a dumb movie about people falling in love. It's about what happens after you fall in love. And it actually deals with some fairly heavy issues of, you know, how much of your life are you willing to give up for another person? So, yeah, I think the movie will sort of surprise a lot of people in bad ways and in good ways.
Okay, there we go. Now, before we take a break, I should have brought this up earlier, but I'm gonna keep this short and sweet because this press release just cracked me up. I received, and thank you, Abdul, for sending this to me, Abdul Hakim Shabazz. But the headline, Hoosier Nation protests anti-white bigotry of Machete. Film that shows open today. They just bleeped with the wrong Mexican. Calling it the anti-white snuff film. And let's see, Minutemen and militias are portrayed as wanton killers, murdering illegal aliens and children in the desert like jackrabbits, and using derogatory terms like wetback. Okay. And let's see, quoting from the press release, add to insult and injury, Machete was made in part with your tax dollars via tax incentives and location access provided by the Texas Film Commission.
Yep.
Funny, I don't remember seeing any of Indianapolis, Gary, or Fort Wayne in Machete, so just saying, folks. And on top of all this, the contact number, and I'm not going to give this person's name, but the contact number for Hoosier Nation has a 773 area code.
That would be
the Chicagoland area. So I will say to the Hoosier Nation media director, can I see your birth certificate, please? All right, we're going to take a short break and talk about what's new on DVD, regardless of where they shot the movie. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
It's
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. I'm here with Christopher Lloyd and Lisa Trifone. Kobe Slagle's over here as well. Yeah, I like anti-white snuff films, the Get Whitey films. But I'll watch Get Carter and Jim Brown movies, so there. Equal opportunity, Get Whitey. Oh, sorry, what was that?
Get Whitey Carter?
Wasn't he an outfielder? He should have been. No. We'll move on. So moving on with the guy portion of this week's Film Sociology, we talked about George Clooney. We talked about Danny Trejo, which Chris said is 66 years old. We'll have to cut his leg and count the rings. My goodness. Hey, well, I guess what? Sean Connery was 70 when he made League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, I think that was his last one.
Of course, he wasn't doing a whole heck of jumping around in that one either. So.
Was that his last one or Finding Forrester?
No.
Finding Forrester was much earlier.
Yeah, and apparently, and of course I learned this from my favorite AV Club news source, The Onion, apparently he's lending his voice to a Scottish animated film, and let me tell you, the animation looks really bad.
Wow.
Really, really bad.
Like,
so,
artistically bad?
Yes,
or like
artistically bad.
Kindergartner's bad.
Yes. He plays a skateboarding grandpa that's supposed to help out this. As soon as I said that, Chris's eyes rolled. So, yeah, I don't know. Apparently we need to top Welcome to Moose Sport as a great actor's last film. So, have at it, Sean. But we'll get to that. Now, speaking of great actors, and hopefully not his last film, and we brought up Charles Bronson. It's not the British Gran Torino. It's not the British Death Wish. It is Michael Caine, though, as Harry Brown. Not a sandwich. That's a hot brown. Harry Brown is Michael Caine, is an aging man who is in a bad neighborhood and, well, takes matters into his own hands.
Mr. Harry Brown, police. Is there anyone here with you, Mr. Brown?
No, I'm a widower. What's this all about? I'm scared, Harry. I'm scared all the time. To them out there, this is just entertainment.
I'm sorry to have to tell you, but Mr. Atwell is dead.
Give me a morning, madam.
Did you ever kill anyone? I want to do some business.
So what do you want?
I want a cat. Of
course you do.
Is she okay? Maybe we should take her to the hospital.
She's my business.
You're aware of the shooting on Curzon Street with two dead.
We recovered the murder weapon at the scene. It was an old military bayonet.
You've never really talked about your time in the Marines.
The Marines were a lifetime ago. I was a different man then.
Tell me what happened in the subway with Leonard.
Who's Leonard?
He's the man you and your mates murdered.
Can you confirm that a number of deaths are attributed to a vigilante?
He told me he talked to the police, and what did you lot do? Nothing.
As far as I'm concerned, Harry Brown's doing us a favour.
He's got a gun! He's got a gun!
You failed to maintain your weapon, son.
So apparently we are in the minor trend of really good actors doing really simple action films like Michael Caine and Liam Neeson. And, of course, Eastwood, well, he's been doing it for a long time. A lot of people have been comparing this to Gran Torino and Death Wish. I think partially because it's a pretty simple revenge story. You know, old guy taking down young guys. And well, Caine's a good enough actor that he can, you know, bring a little bit of depth to it, a little bit of emotion to it, and not be a knuckle-dragging mongoloid or a member of the Expendables without the Botox surgery. And really bring up what is kind of a average story, but I still enjoyed it. I think mostly because of Michael Caine. And Emily Mortimer is the police officer. That's the female voice in the trailer, who I'd also seen in City Island. So working with Andy Garcia and Chris and Michael Caine in 1 year, that's not bad. Bad place to be. So, but no, it's good to see Michael Caine, who's, I know, older than Danny Trejo. He's got to be.
Not much. I think he's in his early 70s. So think about those. Danny Trejo, Michael Caine, contemporaries.
Yes, they are.
They could have been in high school together.
They could have, and they're both stomping tail with great, great vigor and vim, I guess. So
why do you think this whole genre exists?
What, revenge?
Old revenge. This whole thing. I mean, wasn't there a TV show on for a long time called The Equalizer?
Oh, Edward Woodward was great in that.
And wasn't that the entire premise of the show was just old guy beats up on young guys?
Yes,
every week?
And it happened in about 48 minutes or 45 minutes.
Now imagine if someone made a show that was all about young people beating up on old people, even if the old people were bad people.
Aren't those Bum Fights DVDs, which we don't recommend or review here at Film Sociology?
We do not condone.
We don't. I don't know what you. I don't know what I read about it in the magazine.
I guess as someone who's getting on in years himself.
Oh, stop it! Really?
Come on, we both start our age with four now, so
yeah,
we're not young anymore.
Not Michael Caine. Come on, or Danny.
But still, I'm at that age where, you know, you start to see these movies with these young whippersnappers, and you think, I could take them.
Well, look at you, Slagle.
Wow.
Get off his lawn. I don't know. I don't mind it. And by the way, so you're really looking forward to Red.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least that's a comedy, so.
Are you, okay. And butt stomping Helen Mirren.
Which
is a good place to be.
As a brunette, no less.
What?
As a brunette, no less.
Hey, she can admit, Dame Helen can do whatever she wants.
She's amazing.
Yes, she is, in all sorts of ways. So
I would love to have my butt stuffed by Helen Mirren.
I said it first, on these airwaves. We have audio of it. Hi, Lisa, how you doing?
Well, I think I prefer the chick flick shows. No, I'm teasing.
Good. Okay. But yeah, that's coming up a little bit. That's coming up later on this season. So I don't know. I guess, you know, old guys can do action films too. So and I'm glad that Helen Mirren is doing this, because I think a few weeks ago I got a little bit of flack because I said about the film Salt. Well, it's nice to see, you know, it's nice to see Angelina Jolie getting out and stomp and tail it, which she's what, 36, 38, something like that?
I think she's younger than me. Mid-30s, something
mid-30s. So, you know, who knows? Maybe there will be a female Expendables, as Slate.com wrote about once.
I thought she was actually very convincing in the action role in that movie, except for the scene where they had her go up against Liev Schreiber. That guy is a monster. He's like 6'4 and 230 or something.
And sounds like Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
see, he was part of the reason that, well, not the reason, many reasons why the Ethan Hawke Hamlet didn't do it for me, because I'm like, Laertes would tear you apart. Look at you. You're a geeky little film student. I don't care if you did take fencing classes, Hamlet. He's going to tear you a new hole. Come on. I'm sorry. I had issues with that. I had issues with many things with that film, but anyway.
Is that sizeism? Are you judging?
As somebody who's 5'5", I don't know what you're talking about.
Danny Trejo, 5'7".
So? So I keep my hair big.
5'7", 66.
Oh, come on. And, you know,
I'm starting to wonder why you know so much about this guy's, like...
Oh, because I was looking him up when I was writing my review.
Because I said earlier, they did...
I'm picturing Chris on, like, IMDb, just scrolling down, reading all
of them. Oh, I went to the source, celebheights.com.
Wow.
Where they, like, get people to pose next to him in a picture so they can then compare.
Wow. Man.
Hey, I'm thorough. I'm Rotten Tomatoes, man.
I know
legit.
You apparently, yeah, you have to. And you got a sponsor on the app as well. Congratulations. There's cheese on the burger now. That's very good. So yeah, go rent Harry Brown. I don't know if you need to buy it unless you're Michael Caine completist and looking at his films, and he would even say, "Why would you?" So here's what I think of Harry Brown.
Now that was a good movie.
And speaking of Michael Caine, I'll get to the other titles in a little bit, because I just remember the two stories. I think the two famous quotes he had. One was when he, you know, took the film Jaws: The Revenge.
Yeah.
And you know, he goes, I think I'm paraphrasing, but he said, "Yeah, I didn't think much of it until I read the original paycheck." And the other one. Maybe it wasn't him, but it was somebody else along the lines of, you know, I don't remember the movie. I remember the house it got me, but I don't remember the movie all that well. Well, yeah. On TCM earlier this week, I saw from 1972. See if you remember this one. Lisa, maybe you. That's okay. You don't. But it's a British drama called X, Y, and Z with Michael Caine and Elizabeth Taylor. And they were a married couple. Apparently Richard Burton was out making his own bad movies, like Bluebeard. And he's having an affair with Susanna York. This is 1972, of course. And it's really shrill. It's like really bad Edward Albee. You know, it's a married couple yelling at each other, and it's not Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And I'm fascinated with the Liz Taylor, Richard Burton films of the late 60s and early 70s, because it was one of those. I remember in the 90s saying when Stallone and Schwarzenegger would have a new film, I'd say, good God, who keeps giving these people money? That's what you're saying about Liz and Dick in 1973.
Yeah.
My goodness. Well, at least with Burton, he had Equus. But otherwise, that decade's just a big wasteland of suckage. It's really. And I own a couple of them. They're stunningly bad. Like Bluebeard, where Richard Burton is the title role, and there's Raquel Welch and Joey Heatherton. How bad is it that Raquel Welch outacts Joey Heatherton?
Oh, boy.
She's like Helen Mirren by comparison. So, and yeah, Liz did films like Boom with Richard Burton and X, Y, and Z, and the really bad melodrama Ash Wednesday with Henry Fonda, and The Bluebird. They made George Cukor did a movie of The Bluebird that was just bizarre as hell. And, yeah, just a bad. I said it. And I'll say it. I'll make you watch it, Mr. Slagle, as part of your segment.
I don't want to watch it.
You'll watch something and like it. All right. A couple other titles. If would you buy this on Blu-ray, I guess, is the question. The Evil Dead.
The original?
Yes.
See, I would not, because Evil Dead 2 is, for all intents and purposes, just a straight remake with slightly more money.
And more fun.
And more fun, so no.
Okay, so, well, somebody's going to buy that. Oh, by the way, also out on DVD and Blu-ray, Marmaduke and Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married 2. Let's take a break. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show, here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
Welcome, Chris and Lisa. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. If you see the Hoosier Nation protesting outside AMC Castleton, let me know about it. I'd love to hear it.
Or outside of WFYI after this program.
come and get me. And I'm also on Facebook. Lisa Trifone from the IIFF and Christopher Lloyd from the Film App are here. Kobe Slagle is here. We'll get to his segment in just a little bit. But I did want to say, on the Film App, you did do the That Guy, That Gal character actor thing. And I had to throw my two cents. How can you guys bring up Christopher McDonald and not bring up Thelma and Louise or Quiz Show?
Oh, sorry.
My God. What's wrong with you?
Well, we had a lot of territory to cover, a lot of that, guys.
How much was that originally? How much was that audio originally, and then you had to cut it down? This is almost 20 minutes.
We actually try and record fairly tight, and I just take out the ums and the ahs, or at least some of them.
No, I don't do that.
No, because...
It's like a mammoth script.
Yeah, because if you try to like do 40 minutes and edit it down to 20, you'd be there all night.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I love the graduation for people that become names. The first two that come to mind for me were Chris Cooper and Jim Broadbent. It also helps that they won Oscars, too. But that's, you know, really chime one up for them.
And another example is Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was, you know, he played, you know, the smarmy kid in School Ties, or not School Ties, Scent
of a Woman.
And he was one of the tornado flunkies in Twister.
Yeah, I remember that, too.
And he was the secretary to the rich guy in the Big Lebowski.
Yep.
I mean, really, it wasn't until about, like, 9 years ago that he started to get cast in meatier roles, and then someone said, hey, let's try this guy in a main role.
The same way with John C. Reilly. The thing I loved hearing was that, I think it was, I can't remember if it was New York or Chicago, but they did Sam Shepard's True West.
Yeah.
And they'd switch roles.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was Nightly or Weekly, so... That was pretty cool.
And I have to mention Scott Glenn, my all-time...
Your guy, yeah!
My all-time favorite, you know, actor you see, you know, all the time, but people probably can't put a name to him, even though he actually had a couple starring roles, like in Silverado.
I do enjoy Silverado.
But
The Right Stuff.
Yeah, and of course he was in the Silence of the Lambs. He played the American submarine captain in Hunt for Red October.
Mm-hmm. But also, I think you mentioned Silence of the Lambs. You have to bring up everybody's favorite lantern jaw guy, Charles Napier.
Charles Napier.
A regular of the Jonathan Demme players.
Oh, yeah. Another guy. And I mentioned Clifton Collins Jr. He's a younger guy. He's been in tons of stuff.
Yeah, he nice loss of the appendage in Extract.
Yes.
Not that appendage, the other one. The other half. Anyway.
Oh, and we had to talk about Michael Ironside. Just about the guy, amazing how many movies in which he loses his arm or arms.
You mentioned that. I thought of that during the first scene of Machete.
There's literally like 5 movies he's been in where he has an arm chopped off. Or 2.
Must be a fetish.
Yeah.
Don't look that up, Kobe. You can't look that up website at work. And by the way, what is the website you brought up about Trey? Celebrity Heights?
Celebheights.com. Someone turned me on to that.
Yeah, we can count that as research. That's all right. Hey, when I was 12, I'm 5'5", and when I saw Dudley Moore was dating Susan Anton, I went, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Chalk one up for us. I used to freak out the really attractive basketball players by asking, females, and by asking them out. What's this dwarf want with me? So there.
It's just an interesting aside how male movie actors are also often tend to be on the small side. It's because the standard ideal is tall, dark, and that's another column.
Handsome. Are you still making sure there's the blonde equals bad guy campaign?
Oh yeah.
Or the albino hitmen.
Yes. If you'll go on the film app, you'll see I had a long essay about how blonde men are always dissed in the movies.
You're gonna get a nasty letter from Paul Bettany, who also played an albino, and also gonna be in the Johnny Winter story.
No,
he's not. Okay. Why are you gonna read? We're not going there. Okay, there's a segment that we introduced a few weeks. So you guys get to witness this, and this is the brainchild of my producer over here to not only become more of a part of the show, but to expand his film knowledge. And Kobe, I'll let you take this.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
He produced that piece himself. And this all came about because I got old man on him when I was stunned that he had never heard the phrase spaghetti western.
Wow.
You've heard spaghetti western, right, Lisa?
I have. In fact, the last time I was here, we kicked off What is Kobe Watching?
That's right. Okay, so that's right. You were here for this. Mm-hmm. So, as part of his assignment, I had him watch the Sergio Leone masterpiece, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Mr. Slagle, your thoughts? Can I have your
mic?
It
was kind of hard to get...
You're not used to 3-hour westerns, are you?
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. Compositionally, the thing was amazing. There's not a bad shot anywhere.
That's because Sergio Leone was awesome.
It was, yeah. That was really cool. But, and the last shootout scene was
one of my two favorites. For me, it's The Wild Bunch and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is the all-time great Western shootout.
That's something else I'm hearing that I need to see is The Wild Bunch.
We'll get to that. One step at a time, grasshopper.
Or Once Upon a Time in the West, which incidentally, in the movie The American, they are watching.
That is, and call out. Yeah. I gave that to him to watch next, because he still has...
Fistful of Dollars, a few dollars more, and
Duck You Sucker, also known as Fistful of Dynamite. And, yeah, Once Upon a Time in the West. Because at the very least, Once Upon a Time in the West, my favorite is the, they call it the, depending on who you talk to, is the, but for radio, we'll say the, oh my God, it's Henry Fonda shot in Once Upon a Time in the West. And you will like Claudia Cardinale.
Yeah.
Believe me.
You came in the office this morning. You're going to fall in love with Claudia Cardinale.
I did.
And, looked her up, and she's a babe.
And a good actress to boot.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
what'd you think of the music?
What?
In Good, Bad, and the Ugly, by God's composer, Ennio Morricone.
It was...
Oh, come on! Seriously? Besides the fact that you hear the theme every week on this show?
The opening credits was cool.
Yes!
Oh. Yeah. Ennio, probably my all-time favorite film composer.
Just amazing. And really one of the first, probably the first guy to incorporate electric guitar, and just everything from... bells and whistles and vocalizations.
Yeah, human and pops and things like that.
Everything.
Yeah.
And it just adds to it. And the wailing trumpet in the shootout scene where it's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'm going to have to bring it in and play music from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So anyway, I think we're going to extend what is Kobe watching. So I'm going to let you at least get maybe a shorter Western in, get a Fistful of Dollars in, and then maybe if you can get through Once Upon a Time in the West,
yes.
And then we'll move on to another film genre, film style for you. So, ladies and gentlemen, there we go, an extended version. It's so good. We did a sequel of the Spaghetti Western edition of What Is Kobe Watching? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Got to work on that.
I'm going to.
Lisa, what have you seen recently?
What have I seen recently? Last time I was here,
Are you still off duty, or are you starting to look at submissions now?
We haven't started looking at submissions.
Okay.
That'll open in October, so we start up again right away.
Okay.
Last time I was here, it was I was headed out to see Eat, Pray, Love, so I caught that one. Well, I actually had to laugh because that one is one that's also at roughly about 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. That one has not gotten the
poor,
love.
Poor Julia.
You know, but it's got that built-in audience. Every woman between 25 and whatever that has read that book is going to go see the movie, you know.
And you read it, right?
I have read it,
and
yeah.
How did the adaptation go for you?
You know, it went well. They obviously had to take, you know, a whole portions of it out, condense everything. It's not giving anything away. It's Eat, Pray, Love, that she falls in love at, you know, her last stop. They could have done it a little differently. The story was more about her journey and self-discovery, and it ends with a, you know, happily ever after, Julia Roberts and Javier Bardem sailing off together sort of moment, which I felt a little jilted on, that sort of shortchanged. But it's Hollywood, so they're going to do that.
So what's the end of the book?
Well, the end of the book, she does, and her next book is one called Committed, and it's about she ends up getting married again and, you know, restoring faith and love and everything. But it's more about this is what I learned, you know.
See. Okay. So
but they have to do the Hollywood thing.
Pretty people, pretty locations.
Live happily ever after, you know.
Okay. But you still enjoyed it?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
Did you see it, Chris?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Eh.
As guy show, that's love. Just grind your heel into the movie, why don't you?
As I said in my review, I wish they'd stopped after Eat, because the Italy sequence is great, and then the Pray and Love parts, I think, are in, where they're in Bali and
India.
And India, respectively, or those backwards.
Right.
Yeah, just really draggy. And she goes to find enlightenment from a spiritual guy, a medicine man, whatever they're calling him, who, as many people have commented, he looks like Yoda, but on an even worse dental plan.
Jeez. And you know who's in that film as well? Another person that graduated from that guy, Richard Jenkins.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, I never thought a movie in which I'd say, boy, I wish I could see me some less Richard Jenkins in this.
Really?
I really did not care for the character in the part, and it has this whole scene where he pours out his soul to her, and it's supposed to be this big revelatory moment, and I just felt like slinking out of the back of the theater. It just felt icky and uncomfortable.
Because he didn't get a chance to explore his love to Frances McDormand and Burn After Reading. That's why.
And
I think that was one of the big challenges of the film, was so much of what happened in the book happened in her head.
Yeah.
And happened in these moments of self-discovery.
That's
and
where
we're, yeah. How do you translate that? And, you know, the Texan, Richard the Texan or whatever his name is, doesn't play that huge of a part in the book. He's just a character at the ashram, but he's
but you,
he's
you got Richard Jenkins, you got to give him something.
You know.
Yeah. That's what people have said, is that she's a wonderful wordsmith, and that it's a very literary experience reading that book. I don't know. I just don't think
so like the Italy stuff, was it food porn? I mean, would I have liked it more? Would I like it more? Would I have liked it more if Giada De Laurentiis was eating? Oh yeah. She
I
never
feel like I have to chime in and just mention how great of shape George Clooney is in for The American.
Yeah.
That was okay to watch.
Yeah. Oh, I've
got to stand up for, like, the female perspective.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean,
he looks very fit.
Yeah, here at Film Sociology, we call it male appreciation because it sounds scholastic. Yeah, there's some pretty people in that film. And a priest that doesn't wield a shotgun.
That's what the Eat, Pray, Love needed. It needed a
shotgun,
little
shotgun.
More
shotguns.
Okay, next week for What Is Kobe Watching? Shotgun-wielding priest.
That's an entire genre of its own.
And then there's, of course, Ron O'Neill, who was priest in Superfly. And yeah, you'll get the blaxploitation soon, sir. I assure you.
Have you seen I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I own it. Are you kidding?
Okay.
You saw it recently?
No,
or?
I've not seen it. I just remember seeing it.
You know
it
what?
In the video
store. Speaking of, because I mentioned earlier, I was listening to the commentary by Fred Williamson on Death Journey. Yeah, I own Fred Williamson movies on DVD. Don't judge. But he turned that down because he thought it was very disrespectful. That was his bread and butter that they were making fun of. So,
wow.
So there. But yeah, I was the 1988, 1989, I was a suburban white kid who went and saw Do the Right Thing, Hollywood Shuffle, and I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka, being the only white kid in the theater by about a 5-mile radius. But guess what? Everything was fine.
Nice.
Even after Mookie threw the garbage can through Sal's Pizzeria, everything was fine.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. So there. But yeah, I've seen it. It's fun. It's cute. You know, it helps if you know some of those films, which I've obviously owned many.
Yeah, I don't know many of them. I just remember seeing that in the video store, like, years ago and thinking, oh, my God.
Because Navy SEALs was checked out. Ooh. And by the way, there are no more video stores. I don't want to get rid of the DVD segment, at least with that, because there are no video. I know, but there are no video stores, and I don't...
But stuff's still coming out in video, whether you're downloading it or actually going to a store and pulling it off a shelf.
I have said, and I did it on... I mentioned it on Facebook earlier this week, I think I'm finally going to just buckle and cave to Netflix.
You don't have Netflix?
No, I don't.
Oh, you should. I mean...
I know. That's... You know what? Lou Harry said this. He said... I think it was him that said that, you know, 2 weeks of Netflix, and you'll kick yourself that you didn't do it 2 years ago.
Well, especially because, you know, even on a very, I mean, I think we're on, like, the $8 a month plan, and even at that level, you get all the free streaming, and they are expanding what they have online for free, and it's pretty amazing, the stuff that you can do.
Now, what about the...
Into a Netflix infomercial?
What? No, underwriter.
Underwriter.
This is NPR. Oh my gosh.
Or you know, Apple TV or, you know,
something
else.
My only concern is as far as the new titles, because I know that's really what I'm looking for. And I know some studios are just kind of holding up back on the old title, new titles for a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
it
varies. Sometimes
that kind of bugs me.
The walls are coming down, though, slowly.
The revolution will not be broadcast. It will be, but it'll be on HD.
Well, the revolution will be broadcast, and it will have been ripped and copied.
Great. Or it's the bad bootlegs you get off East Washington Street, which we also don't condone or endorse or any of that stuff.
No, bad.
Also, for me, I got a stack of DVDs and Blu-rays I haven't even watched yet.
Yeah.
And it's leisure, you know, semi-leisure. So.
Yeah, I hate to say so. I set them aside. You know, my wife will say, oh, can you set that one aside? And I'll be like, oh, okay. And the piles, you know.
I just finished season 4 of Columbo.
Wow.
I love Columbo.
I still have not rewatched District 9, and I really like that movie.
Man. Is there a lot of... a lot of features on that one?
I think so, yeah. But again, I haven't watched it.
And say what you will about the A-Team, they cast this District 9 guy as Murdoch. That was kind of cool.
That was kind of cool.
One of the few highlights on that. Yeah, I'm currently going to... Yes, I'm one of those, I go through every single special feature because, well, I paid for it, I'm going to use it. But I'm currently going through Disc 2 of Philip Kaufman's Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
The 78 one?
78 one with Donald Sutherland with curlier hair than I, and Brooke Adams, and Leonard Nimoy, and Jeff Goldblum. So, really good. I've forgotten how good it was with that really creepy ending, which I don't want to give away because I know you haven't seen it, Kobe.
I have not.
Have you seen any of the Body Snatcher films?
I have not.
Gonna add that to the list. Okay. That subject matter for your segment for 5 years, sir.
You're okay, not... I haven't seen them either, so you're not alone on that one.
Look at
if,
that.
Well, if we could work
I
on,
I just got like the stink eye from Matt, by the way.
No. I'll, you know what? I'll just create. What is Lisa watching? How about that?
Yes.
We alternate.
It's festival amazing. Submissions. That's what she's watching.
Before I met her, my wife had not seen any of the Star Wars movies, any of the Lord of the Rings movies,
such a guy,
any of the Indiana Jones movies.
I had the same thing. I could have said, my wife, when we never saw Enter the Dragon, or never saw Blaxploitation, never saw Hammer Horror, she has now.
Yep.
And guess what? Soon after we got married, she goes, do I really need to watch this? No, I guess not. Oh, boy. So, what was the first film you took your wife to?
Oh, boy.
Put you on the spot.
So let's see. So it would have been 2000.
She's listening, by the way.
It would have been 2005, yes. So I don't remember.
Wow. Some spouse you are. I'm gonna start putting my different names on and email the film app and go, why don't you know this? Where's your birth certificate? First thing my wife and I saw together, and I let her pick. That's the key. Let her pick. No matter how bad her taste is. No, Lynn's is fine. Lynn's is good. She picked To Jillian on her 37th birthday with Peter Gallagher's eyebrows and Michelle Pfeiffer as the most beautiful dead person ever. Michelle's my queen. Michelle's the one, because husbands have this. The, you know, there's a knock at the door and it's Michelle and she goes, I've left David. Let's go. And I look at, you know, Lynn, Emma, it's been real. I'm gone. And we've been thinking about this long before Friends had the little list episode, dumb thing, but I said to Lynn, you know who's in this? And she goes, yes. And I said, you're okay? And she's like, yeah, because the movie's going to be over in 2 hours, and I'm still going to be here. That's a good spouse.
Really?
That's my wife.
Because I actually left Michelle Pfeiffer for my wife.
Shut up. Yeah, you and Fisher Stevens.
He has to get the points back somehow, because he doesn't remember.
Yeah, I got your point right here. All right, guys, plug your websites before we can get some final words in. Lisa, ladies first.
Thanks. IndieFilmFest.org. Follow us on Twitter at IndieFilmFest and find us on Facebook. We're gearing up for 2011 already.
And we got to work on the Indianapolis International Film Festival, Tommy Wiseau's The Room Connection. Yes. And I'm not going to get any further into that.
We're going to leave it at that.
It's official. It's on the air. And Chris?
That's www.thefilmyap.com. Or go to Rotten Tomatoes and look for me.
Oop. Yeah, just you.
Hey, it literally took me 18 months to get on, so I'm milking it.
Congratulations on that. And some final words, Kobe. Let's hear it.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to WFYI HD to the Point. This is Film Sociology. I'm Matthew Soucy. Have a good weekend. Go see a good movie. Go rent. Go buy. Go to a video store if you can find one. See ya!